Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett.
And I'm Sickle, and we are Sickle and Everett. We are the Unhallowed Reviewers. And welcome back for this week. We're going to jump right into it, talking about some fun stuff. We have, of course, a list of notes of things that we want to talk about. And I have no idea what Ifrit's note here is called Hellboy-isode.
Well, that's so what that was. I would love for him to explain that. About having like a Hellboy-ish episode where we kind of just chat about the old movies and the new movies and stuff we like and don't like about Hellboy. But
man, I completely forgot, like, just because we weren't able to catch it together, that we haven't even talked about it.
Yeah, so let's talk about it.
Oh, heck yeah. Let's
oh,
do this.
Hell yeah.
I get it, because Hellboy.
Yeah, it's a Hellboy-isode. But it's not. We're going to talk about other stuff, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
I saw Hellboy on Sunday, and I think Sickle saw Hellboy the previous Friday. All these dates don't matter anyway, because the podcast is coming out tomorrow, which is Friday again. So, anyway, we didn't see it at the same time, but we both had feelings about it. I think I can officially say that we both ended up enjoying it, except for there's some things that we didn't enjoy.
Yes, and I don't know if we definitely didn't line up across the board on things. I have developed a rather cocky attitude towards movies. I feel sometimes like I've become one of those hypocrites that's like, if those who can't do teach, and I feel like that same thing applies to people that critique and review things.
And I'm the like those who can't do teach, it. Teach gym thing where I just am like in it for the gym class.
Yeah, and I just like, I don't know, I go into a movie and I'm like, I didn't like it this, and I'm not saying I could do it better, but I didn't like it.
You're allowed when it came to say that. I mean, you don't have to have a solution to have a problem.
Yeah, but sometimes it feels like almost more cocky and like worse when you do have a solution that you think would be better.
You're like, you know, it would have been better if the director had done X, Y, and Z, and you're like, oh my god, I sound like this now.
I'm so full of myself, and like, that's the way I like had this as existential moment, like while I was watching Hellboy, where I was like, I'm totally thinking that I'm better than like these people that make millions of dollars to do this.
To be fair,
just because I've had this idea.
That's a good point. But the guy who did Hellboy also did, like, The Descent and Wolf Soldier and, like, a bunch of other really good horror movies. And
yeah, like, it's the, yeah, he's got a great resume.
And so it's kind of interesting what happens in Hellboy, because it's not really, like, a horror thing. You know? So, like, the critique of Hellboy has a lot more writing on its story than I think most horror does, you know? And that's kind of where your critique was really heavy, right? Was it's sped. I mean, I'm not going to say your critique for you. I'm just going to assume this is what it was because we've talked about it. But it's sped up a little bit too fast. Some stuff's disjointed. There's certain characters in it that either are too much into it and not important, or not in it enough and super important. So, like, there's some weirdness around the story and how it plays out. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I have to dive into it a little bit. So, like, yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed it. I just didn't think that. I mean, I thought that they tried to pile way too much in. I have
Spider-Man
not read.
Spider-Man 3 Syndrome.
Yes, I have not. That's such a great example, and we brought that up off podcast before. That is a great like similarity between the two, because like Spider-Man 3. Would have probably been amazing if Venom wasn't in it. And I love Venom.
Yeah,
but the way that they
wrong.
Treated Venom just made, like, it just piled that story up with way too much crap. It was very clear that Sam Raimi didn't give a crap about Venom. But the plot for, like, Sandman and, like, the side plot for Green Goblin could have developed perfectly. If it had just been those characters.
I think he did a decent
but they had
job
to throw Venom
in that movie of doing the Spider-Man Venom suit thing, and in a way that movie could. But it's still, like, that part is not the whole story. So it's hard to, like, say that one part made it or broke it. It's just that, like, he did a part in an interesting way that I thought was unique and cheesy. Like, he did a Sam Raimi thing, right? And that's cool, but like you kind of have to do a little more than that if you got this many fans of this franchise. And I don't want to go down the fanboy route because that's a bad route to go down. But anyway, Hellboy does the same thing.
Hellboy just kind of piles a little bit too much, and the venom of Hellboy for me was the Blood Queen.
That's a sick analogy.
In hindsight, like when I was looking back on the movie, I was like, you didn't need her to make this movie awesome. Like, to me, the only thing that movie that the new Hellboy would have lost by not having Blood Queen in it was the sweet demon concepts that they had at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing you would have missed out on, because, like, the rest of her is just a blatant ripoff of almost line for line to me of Rasputin from the first Hellboy.
Except for, like, you know, Rasputin doesn't really want to have sex with Hellboy and the Blood Queen.
Yeah, he's not
does.
Hitting on him. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Actually, go back and watch it. I bet he does. There's that line where he's like, why don't you sit on my bald head? And I'm just going to hear that.
But that's a good point. There's a scene in it where, like you basically have the Blood Queen at the end of the movie doing all she needs to do. But she's in it throughout the whole thing, and there's three main villains in the movie, and they're all intertwined but not directly, right? So like you have Baba Yaga, and you have the guy whose name I can't pronounce, who's a Fae,
Gruagak,
and then you have the Blood Queen, and Baba Yaga and Gruagak are like in it. It's spoilers, by the way. I'm sorry, we probably should have said that way earlier, but spoilers.
Whoops.
Our bad. You can fix it at post.
I'm not doing that. You should have seen it by now.
Baba Yaga and Grook, is that his name?
Gruagak?
Are like, we ate Hellboy, blah, blah, blah. And then Gruagak ends up getting told by Baba Yaga to, like, resurrect the Blood Queen, because she'll give him power to take out blah, 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 blah. It's like the cycle of things in it. But, like, they should have given them all more equal time, or at least Baba Yaga more time. But I know, talking about it right now, I actually don't know if I agree 100% with that, because they were totally setting up for something later. Like, Baba Yaga is one of those characters that's like, you don't do a whole thing on her right away. But one of the things that leads into, and I'm sorry if we're kind of just, I'm just stepping all over what you're going to say, but you got to write a review and I didn't, so suck it. is that, like, they did a lot of things that I actually liked a lot in this movie, which was, and I think Sickle absolutely hated, which was like flashback stuff and storytelling via like the whole methodology of, oh, remember that, like, a kid, it's like the thing we did back in Nam, kid, and like they kind of have a small exposition about it, and you get the story from that small exposition, right? And I kind of like that about Hellboy, because whenever I was reading the comics of Hellboy, I always felt kind of lost, and like I kind of liked that, because it was like, oh man, I should go read that. I should go find what that is. There's a story somewhere I've missed. And that kind of aspect of Hellboy was cool in general. But when you look at it from like a movie perspective, you're like missing out. Like, or you feel like you're missing out while getting everything you need to have the movie not totally not make sense. But you still are left wanting, which is a strange feeling.
Yeah, and I don't... I think that's bad. Like, where you think that was... fun, or there's a part of
my
that you enjoy.
My nostalgia is what's making that enjoyable for me. And again, different lenses, right? Like, I'm watching it from, like, a Hellboy franchise perspective, and someone watching it from, like, a film perspective, self-contained, I can totally
see... It was bad filmmaking.
Yeah, it was bad filmmaking to do that so often.
Yeah, and there's just a part of me, like, the part of me that was very cocky and was very, like, I could have done this better, was that I felt like if they'd removed the Blood Queen, tweaked the script a little bit, and then just made Baba Yaga manipulating Gruagak to her own gain, and not bring the Blood Queen into it, would have made a much more unique dynamic for Hellboy and his antagonist that we haven't experienced. It would have brought in more of, like, Baba Yaga's universe, which was a lot more interesting and had more of that, like, macabre fantasy element to it, which I think is where Hellboy excels. And where he's touching into an environment that nobody else does, and I feel like the subplot of Hellboy's existence, of him being the inevitable annihilation of humanity, has already been done, and so it's not that that isn't an important element of his character, because they even bring it up in Hellboy 2 as well, with the Death Angel, or with the Angel of the Death Angel, the Angel of Death, when it brings him back and it reminds What's-Her-Face, like, hey, just you know he's going to destroy everything and break your heart, and she's like, I don't care. Like, yeah. You can still have that element without making it the primary part of it.
Sure.
And just, like, let him be, I don't know. I just felt like there was this close-knit, really nice story that they had at the core of it, and then they just kind of threw the Blood Queen
in. Like, a longer movie, and they're like, let's push it. I don't necessarily agree. I think the Blood Queen has a little bit more merit than that, but let's just finish this off by talking, and that's fine. We're allowed to disagree on this podcast.
Oh, totally.
To everybody listening. every actor or actress in that movie, I think, did the best job. I think that was great. Like, even though the Blood Queen wasn't necessarily a character that needed to be there, I still think Mila Jovovich did a great job as the Blood Queen, and David Harbour did a great job as Hellboy, and Ian McShane did a great job as his dad. Like, the cast is superb and awesome, and if you see it for any reason, I would see it to go see them do their thing, right?
I agree. Like, the cast was great. I thought David Harbour... and this is... I think so many people are going to see this as an insult to Ron Perlman, who... I love his work. I'm a cult fan of his. But I thought David Harbour did just as good a job, if not better. And I thought... And, yeah, I definitely don't want to take away from Mila Jovovich, because it hurts me to say that I would have preferred her not be in the movie. It's definitely not... herself, but it is just the Blood Queen concept I didn't think worked.
Yeah,
there was but Jovovich I would want in every movie.
There's a funny thing that she said to, like, an interviewer, because, like, Hellboy's kind of been getting bombed a little bit, and,
just a little.
She said, it's funny, because every time someone, like, people end up really liking my movies later, they bomb them right at first. And, like, because, like, they've hated Resident Evil... They've hated, like, other movies that she's in and things like that I can't recall off the top of my head right now, but...
Fifth Element, I think, was bashed pretty
stuff
harsh.
Like that, yeah. It ends up being, like, cult classics and awesome. So, I'm not saying that we're going to push it that way because she said so, but I'm saying maybe watch it again in a year or two and see what you think of Hellboy. But that's it. That's all for the Hellboy episode. I think we could actually spend legitimately 30 minutes talking straight up about Hellboy, but...
I could talk 30 minutes just about Baba Yaga's Chicken House.
That's really cool. But it is really there's cool. Some really cool stuff there, and like there's like a anyway, we won't go into video games, but let's move on to something that is another controversial topic. I finally saw Pet Sematary, and
ding ding ding, put your gloves up.
Oh yeah,
let's go.
This might be the first time we fight physically over podcast.
It might,
because I thought Pet Sematary was awesome. I thought it was great,
and I thought it sucked.
It was on the edge of my seat the entire time, like when the scary stuff was happening. I don't know.
And I was falling asleep.
Are you just being dramatic now, or are you actually serious?
No, but it wasn't really, like, part of me, I can't blame the movie, because I went and saw a really late show.
Fair enough. That, I will say, that definitely can affect how you view a movie, but maybe not for this case. But the thing I liked about Pet Sematary is that it wasn't trying to be It, I think, is the most, like, looking back on why I enjoyed it so much, is that It is complex. It has, like, a lot of story, a lot of development of characters. And
tons of characters.
Pet Sematary is just trying to be a scary movie. Like, it's not, pardon my French, fucking around. Like, it's just a scary movie. Like, it's trying to make you understand that sometimes you don't want to bring stuff back from the dead, and it can be creepy, and there was, like, a lot of good scenes in it that scared me, and I thought put me on the edge of my seat. I thought it built tension well in terms of, like, how the kid and... the actors were interacting. I don't think that it was good acting. I think that the... it's kind of like early James Wan, or maybe like some of the weirder James Wan movies. Like, more maybe Ouija from, like, Mike Flanagan. Like, some... Or not maybe Mike Flanagan did Ouija, I don't remember. I think Oculus. But those movies weren't necessarily, like,
Oculus,
super
yeah.
good movies, but when they built tension, they did a good job of it. And...
Yeah.
They're not supposed to be, like, revolutionary, like, you know, Hereditary-esque films. I think they're just supposed to be scary, you know? And if you can focus on that part of it instead of trying to... Not saying that you did this, like, well, but trying to analyze it, then sometimes it's more enjoyable. Like, we're going to talk about Child's Play in a little bit, but that movie's not going to be, like, revolutionary. I think it's just going to be scary.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, like, sometimes that's... I think that the two... most brilliant things that you can get from horror is just, you know what, I'm going to this because this is my equivalent of going on a roller coaster. That I just want to be thrilled through this, and that entertains me. And then there's also the ones that use horror as a vehicle to really drive home
a story,
a point and a story. But I agree with you. That like it definitely wasn't trying to come at it like, look at how it succeeded. Let's just do that again. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't think they did that.
they couldn't have possibly done that with Pet Sematary.
No, I agree. But it just felt very formulaic to me in its approach. Even though I loved Us, it also did the same thing that I'm about to point out, like a trope that I'm just so tired of and just would want a movie to approach it in any way but this way, which is the family all happy-go-lucky driving up to the new house. I hate it. Yeah. I can't take it anymore. Yeah. Like, it's just, please, like, because it just immediately puts me in, like, at the very beginning of the movie, I'm already rolling my eyes, and it puts me in a bad mood right before the movie's even gotten started.
You just gotta turn that part of your brain off real quick. As soon as you see that, instead of, like, pumping the brakes, just, like, you know, shut the engine off, coast. Like, because you know at that point in that movie, you're gonna not enjoy it if you look at it from that perspective, right?
It's true. But it was late, and I was grumpy, and I think that was a big factor.
And you're completely allowed, not at least your opinion. This, again, is another movie that Sickle wrote a review of, or I guess we wrote a review of, but Sickle writes reviews, let's be real. And, so, like, you definitely have an opinion that's out there on it. I think one thing I will say is that the cats are unpredictable, and they're terrifying, if you have the wrong cat. I, as a small demon child, was attacked by a bunch of hell cats that my parents owned, and it's not a very pretty story. But cats kind of freak me out a little bit. And I'm not, like, children, for some reason, children in horror movies as a vehicle for violence still freaks me out a lot. And I think those are really the two things that drove home the tension for me, was, like, those two things alone. I mean, there's not a ton of it, but those two things alone just built it higher for me.
There was something about the cat from the first one that just got me more.
And I never watched the first one, so that's probably where I'm, like, in a bad spot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Coming at it from a fresh perspective, it gives you a different, it gives you a different perspective than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Probably most people that went and saw the new one probably had seen the old one.
Some will call it better.
So you have an interesting, what?
I said some will call it better, but then I started laughing.
Well, that's a good joke.
Okay, so, chill out.
Like, picture the cat that was from the new one in your head, mm-hmm. and just picture, like, as just, you know, a comparison, like, just an all-gray cat with yellow eyes.
Oh, you know what? I have seen that. I've seen pictures of that. Yeah, okay.
There was just something about it that was so much more, like, intimidating to me. I feel like they also used a lot more of, like, that, like, warning growl that cats do. A lot, where so it's just like sitting still, and it's just like, you know, and you're just like, oh my gosh, that's like really getting under my skin. Like, yeah. I was so much more afraid of the cat in the old one than I was this new one, and like I kept waiting for that cat to do something, and it was doing more of the Wendigo side of things, where it was like manipulating instead of being like pure terror, which is fine, but it just didn't hit me the way the other cat did.
Sure, the one of the other scenes that always got me was combing hair. Because whenever, like, people comb hair in a movie, it usually has to do with, like, them combing a corpse's hair, and then the hair rips out. So I was, like, expecting that, and it never happened. So, like, I think some of that stuff was subverting my expectations. Last thing I'll say, and I'm sorry I'm so excited about this movie, and you hated it so much, but...
It's alright.
It's, like, the car crash scene, like, the kid who gets in the car crash, like, at the beginning, Vincent, I think his name is, or Victor... Do you remember that part? It's not... You don't see the crash. You just see the aftermath, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was, like, blindsided by that. I was not ready for that. And I saw the girl come in... Spoilers, by the way. We didn't say it earlier. And if I assume spoilers in this whole cast, we're never not going to do spoilers, so...
Yeah, oops.
I'm just going to name the episode spoiler, so... That's fair. We'll just know.
There you go. Yeah, but I don't have to do any editing. I appreciate it.
Huzzah! he's, like, kind of... being a dupe and jerking around with some kid, and all of a sudden he's like, is it lunchtime yet? And this person runs in with blood on her shirt, and I was like, oh, well, that's weird. I mean, it's an ER, I guess, so it's fine. And she's like, his head is messed up. And all you see is, like, the left side of this dude. And then all of a sudden it goes to the right side. And you can fucking see his brain. And he's just mangled. And I just wasn't ready for it emotionally. And it just caught me off guard. And I think that set the tone for the movie for me. And it was just, like, from there on out, I was just, like, I don't know, enamored. I don't know what it was. I don't know. Just spell the Wendigo, man.
Yeah, it was a well-done scene, and I enjoyed it. I think that I almost kind of want a more... The one thing that just maybe slightly bothered me about that scene, from a storytelling perspective, which isn't the movie's fault. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it happens in the book as well. Mm-hmm. But it's that there wasn't a cause and effect to that. Like, that came before anything else. And I feel like, to me, all of the supernatural side of things should have come as a consequence to him dealing with the cat.
Yeah, like, why were they trying to warn him and, like, all that stuff? I agree 100%. That was weird to me.
Yeah. And, it, like, for that to come, like, if that came, like, right after he buried the cat, I'd have been like, oh, now things are going down because,
yeah,
you know. And, like, but, I mean, that's just a nitpicky thing. It's not the movie's fault.
Legit criticism is that it kind of was disjointed. But we need to move on because we have a lot of stuff to talk about, and we've been talking about two movies this entire time.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
I, after saw Pet Sematary, I saw The Wind. The Wind was a pretty interesting movie. I think it was really good and...
Please spoil away.
Albeit a little slow up until the end. So, again, spoilers for The Wind, spoilers out. It starts off... So, it's kind of weird because you're watching this movie, and I'm only going to spend, like, 5 minutes on this, or we're going to run out of time for everything, but you're watching this movie. It jumps in time a lot, so get prepared to get confused until you get your bearings. It's basically, like, the same thing you'd feel if you were actually time-traveling, I feel like. Because to start off with, like, a dead person and a baby being stillborn... And then you figure out that the main character, lady, who's married to one of the guys that they live in this house in the prairie with about a house another mile away, tried to deliver the baby, and then, all this stuff happens. But you figure out that eventually she has had a baby at one point and lost it because of, like, some issue that you're really unsure about, but they're led to believe it's because a demon wanted to take the baby. And, like, there's these demons of the prairie thing, that motif that keeps coming through it. And the husband doesn't believe her about, like, seeing things at night. And she's really scared to go outside, but he has to leave her to take the, like... And that was in the past, right? And then it comes back to the future, where she has to leave... The husband has to leave to take the husband of the wife who died back to town or something like that. So she's, like, alone for, like, 2 nights straight. And that's, like, the centerpiece of the story, while it jumps back and forth in time to tell the story. And you end up, like, getting into this kind of absentia-style movie where you can't tell if she's crazy or if there's actually a demon, and characters that you think are dead end up coming back to life or not in other ways. And it kind of is really cool. Like, once you get... If you could, like, trim it up, though. You know how, like, Dragon Ball Z used to take a long time and then they made Dragon Ball Z Kai and it was a shorter? They could do that with this movie and it'd be great because it would pull out all, like... the needless planes moments, and it would be cool.
Is she ever just, like, charging for, like, a week straight? She's just sitting there.
I mean, it feels like it sometimes, for sure. 100% feels like it. And you're like, what is happening? Why does it need to dwell so long? But, it's like, so it's really good, and you're watching it, and it's kind of Memento-esque with the storytelling, and you're not sure, like, you kind of have to get your bearings, and it's interesting, and you end up finding out all this intrigue about what the husband was doing with the like, lady who they used to live next to, and there's some, like, affair stuff going on, or there isn't, and nobody can really tell, and it just gets you into this cluster mind place, right? And then at the end, in, like, the last 5 minutes, like, some shit goes down, and she's the only one left, and she just, like, the last 5 to 10 minutes of the movie is just her, like, sitting in places and imagery. It's, like, worse than It Follows. It's just nonsense. I don't get it as a gym teacher. I don't understand, man. Like, I can't... That's the kind of stuff where you lose me. Like, I was having trouble following this as an idiot demon so long, and, like, I was like, okay, I think I got what's going on here. And then the last 10 minutes or so, they just, like, kind of ruin it by, like, making it psychological. And not that she's psychological, but just trying to make it too, like, thought-provoking. And I'm like, just tell me what the shit happened. And so I'll recommend The Wind because I think a lot of other people really enjoy it. But prepare to, like, have a lot of downtime in between really cool stuff happening. And I just hated the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But it was
pretty
cool.
Brutal,
I mean,
for those slow burners, when you're expecting the climax to really give you something.
You know, and I don't really think I hated it. I actually just didn't like it as much as Pet Sematary, which I immediately saw before, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we did this one time where we saw Are You Afraid of the Dark, which apparently is a good movie, or Afraid of the Dark, or the one with the Tooth Fairy that Guillermo del Toro did.
Yeah.
And it was really crappy. And then we saw Fright Night after it, and you're like, wow, those are just so different, and one of them is terrible, and one of them is good.
One of them was super fun, yeah.
And so in this case, I was, like, watching The Wind, and it was after having watched this thing that I thought was really suspenseful, and now I'm watching this really slow burn movie, and it has a lot of good scenes in it, and it builds up so perfect. And, like, I almost think, like, you could just stop right before the end, like, right after the pivotal moment happens, and not watch the last 10 minutes of her, like, sitting out in the field and shit, and it would be great, right? Because then you're left like, oh my god, was it real? Was it fake? Like, did this happen or did this happen? And you're just in such a good mental spot there that you could have stopped it instead of letting it, like, just drag on for another 5 to 10 minutes. So, there's my review of The Wind. I would definitely go see it if you have a chance, but I would be interested to hear what you have to say, Sickle.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out at some point.
Pretty cool premise, but ending could have done a little more, or just stopped, you know?
Yeah.
So, speaking of movies that could probably just stop in Sickle's opinion, let's talk about Dark Phoenix for just a second.
Yeah, I just have a small opinion on this. Now, there's got to be some, like, whatever you call that, market testing that, like, studios are doing, that they're picking up that, like, fans of Marvel and the X-Men want more Dark Phoenix, and I'm just not getting that vibe. Like, why are we doing Dark Phoenix again?
At Sickle and Ifrit, we've done our own testing, and we have not come up with that conclusion.
No! Yeah, like, all of my friends are like, I've never been a big fan of Dark Phoenix to begin with, and now we're giving it another shot? Like, I don't...
Do we not learn from X-Men 3?
Yeah, it just really bothers me that they're trying it again, and this is the same problem with, like, the Batman movies, where they keep trying the same villains over and over again. Spider-Man has done the same thing. Why have we not touched Mr. Sinister yet?
I don't even know who that is, so I couldn't
tell you. That guy's legit.
He's, like, I know there's a bunch of X-Men villains, but, like, nobody gets... It's too deep of a roster, man, I feel like.
No, that's a good one, man. He's one of the high-end guys that kind of works
right?
in the background. Yeah, they already did Apocalypse. They did.
So, like,
you can't
go back down to another, like, non-world-ending villain.
Sure you can. Dark Phoenix... But that's the problem with Dark Phoenix, is that, like, there's really no way to make it match the climactic battle of Apocalypse, because the whole time they're like, but she's actually good, but she's also bad, sort of, but she's also good. And so there's, like, never a real climax as far as, like, fighting, and it just... that it bothers me. And Mr. Sinister can be pretty intense. Like, he's... like, a lot of the X-Men movies to this point have been about, like, not just necessarily the end of the world, but either the end of humanity or the end of mutants, and a lot of the focus is on, like, can mutants survive the prejudice that they face against humanity? And even though Mr. Sinister is a mutant, he's, like, very, like, semi-anti-mutant, kind of, and he's just, like, very, like, he loves to experiment on them genetically, and he's just, like, this nightmare of a human being, and, or a nightmare of a being, I guess, a mutant, and he, I don't know, dude, he's done some terrible, terrible things, and he isn't, like, apocalyptic, and, like, wants to destroy the world, but he definitely is, like, the kind of, he's, like, that villain that if you just leave him untouched, he just will he'll just slowly eat away at everything.
I feel like it's too obscure, though. Like, you're trying to explain it to me now, and I'm like, this sounds cool, but, like, I still have no concept of who that was before you started talking, right? Like, which isn't bad, it's just that you have to work that much harder to publicize a movie like that, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, as far as we can tell from, like, Marvel, they've just canceled The Gifted, and there's not a lot of X-Men stuff coming out besides that one show that's supposed to be, like, the horror show, right? The horror Marvel show? That I can't remember.
It's New Mutants.
Yeah, and so Dark Phoenix is kind of, like, sounds like there may be their curtain call. I'm actually excited for this cast to be doing Dark Phoenix, as opposed to the other one. I'm willing to watch it. It's kind of like a Godzilla movie to me, where I'm like, okay, this could be interesting. And I'm at the point now where I may actually pay to see King of Monsters in theaters because I saw a trailer in the theater and it made me more excited. All right.
It looks awesome.
Okay, so I want to do one quick real thing and then we can talk about some other stuff that we might have to push to next time. But this week's Twilight Zone, pretty cool, is the first Twilight Zone where you get like some legit Our World type stuff going on. I'm not going to talk about it too much because we don't have time, but this one was interesting, but it was kind of a little campy at parts. There's a lot of like intrigue in it, so if you're into that kind of thing, definitely go watch it. Like intrigue, espionage type stuff, weirdly enough, if you've seen the preview. But it's interesting how it ends, and it gets a little bit to the point where you're like, oh, I didn't know they were going to take this direction in this show. So go ahead and check it out if you haven't yet. It's called A Traveler.
Yeah, my last thought, we'll talk about it. We can elaborate on it next week a little bit more, but I just love the idea of Mark Hamill doing the voice of Chucky, yep. And I think it's a brilliant idea. Mark Hamill, for most people know at this point, are very familiar with the fact that he did the voice of the Joker for the Batman animated series.
And this does sound different to me, so I'm glad that it sounds a little different.
Yes, yeah, but it's just that, like, the voice talent was already there. So it's really awesome to see him get this opportunity, and I think it's going to be one of the best parts of the new movie.
Yeah, I agree. That and the technology twist, which I think people are going to be decisive or divisive upon. So
I agree, but I also agree with you that I think it was a good idea.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We always appreciate you coming back and listening to us Hellions speak about horror films. Like, comment, subscribe, let us know if we should be covering something that we're not, or if we covered something wrong. And anything else, Sigal?
No, I think that's it. We never would cover anything wrong. It's impossible.
No. Bye.